would like to pose a follow-up question to the relationship of nature and, you know, renunciation and realization. To which extent does, you know, especially in the forest tradition, where like nature also is a big
thing. Yeah, it is a thing, yeah.
And Kuti dwellers, and you know, in the Tibetan tradition, there is similar, you know, sort of traditions. In which ways this actually quite a big part, in the sense that when we engage with a natural world, which in itself kind of potentially is always, things are always changing, and you know, trees are falling apart. You can see the plantain tree actually. Mm. You can see the water bubbles. But in the modern world, where we are surrounded by, you know, oftentimes stagnant stuff or things that we attach to our human relationships or whatever, in which way is this actually a key element? And what is then the answer, if it is, in the modern world where such conditions are so rare and becoming rarer and rarer, even like Long Paul said about the forest tradition, you know, so, sort of the hermitages who are now bombarded by music from the villages.
Yes, yes, yeah. Well, you know, one of the things is in terms of nature, yes, a natural setting is quite optimal, very supportive, very helpful. But the nature that Buddha is really trying to get us to see and understand is the nature of all conditioned things in terms of their impermanence, uncertainty, changing nature, the unsatisfactory, stressful, discontent that underlies the human condition because of desire and envy, not self, insubstantiality. So that, you know, in terms of nature, that's the nature that you want. You want to be using a natural setting to help to highlight that reality or that fundamental nature. But whether or not we live in a you know, kind of a big city like London, or out in the forest in you know, the wilds of Thailand, that fundamental nature is still there, and it actually requires. I mean, it's a being in a natural setting is a supportive condition. It's not the end game. And it's really helpful to have, in the same way that the Buddha puts a tremendous emphasis on kalyanamitta, on spiritual friendships, and he encourages solitude. But you want to be paying attention to the supportive conditions that help to facilitate clarity and a willingness to relinquish and let go. So nature, if one is able to, drawing close to a natural setting is a great support for training and pursuing our interest in Dhamma. But when we're not in those supportive conditions, that isn't as if nature has gone away. Nature is really all around us. It's the nature of things.
There's two powerful suttas where the Buddha likens the four foundations of mindfulness to one's ancestral territory.
Oh, right.
And you know, that really resonates for sort of rootless Americans who don't have any ancestral territory whatsoever. So that sense of that's where you find it.
Also, in response to Venerable Yeshe's question, the as Longpo was saying, the kind of the laws of nature are still functioning all the time. But what happens in human society or in urban situations and such like is that we're surrounded by human-centered values, human-centered perceptions. And so that what is meaningful, what's important, is very much based around human wishes, human needs, human priorities, and so on. And so it's not that those are bad, but it's just that the key principle of development of insight is going from a self-centered perspective to a nature-centered perspective. So that seeing things in terms of Dhamma. So even in the midst of a kind of just standing on a tube train in London, like with 200 other people squished into the carriage, rather than being obsessed with I hope I'm going to get to work on time, or I'm going to get to the venue when I'm supposed to, the mind can shift to every single one of these bodies is breathing. All of us were born. We all, every single one of these bodies is going to breathe out and not breathe in again one day. We are all powered by hearts and lungs and livers and kidneys, and you know, all these bodies are functioning according to laws of nature. So just that active contemplation of things in terms of natural order, rather than, did I get on the right tube train? Am I going to get there in time? Etc., etc. So that you're, if you're in a situation where you've got less human constructions, then that nature-centered perspective is closer to the surface, and you haven't got so many kind of human things that the human hand has touched or affected. So it's more immediate, more obvious. You can still be in a forest with no other humans around and still be totally wrapped up in human-centered concerns. I speak from experience. But that's what is one of the benefits living in the countryside and then physical seclusion is that those reminders are closer to the surface, and the dependent nature of this life. And so that the duttangas, which challenge food, sleep, personal space, physical comfort, they're all kind of, all 13 duttangas are aimed pretty directly at those sort of reptile brain territories. That you're challenging those presumptions that are made, so that you're bringing to light, oh yeah, this is a living body. Like, when I spent the rains retreat in 1988 there was only one kuti in the forest, Chuthurst. If you wanted water, you had to carry it to the kuti. There was no other supply. So you'd have to fill up the water tank and carry it up through the forest up to your kuti. So you have a very different relationship to water if you've carried if you carried it, you know, a quarter of a mile from the water tap. Yeah, so that whereas in an ordinary sort of urbanized and sort of developed situation, just go to the tap and plenty of water, it's just there. And so that the duttangas are designed to help even more acutely bring those those natural systems to the surface. So we're less presumptuous. We're less sort of taking refuge in our kind of human-centered values of comfort and personal space and so on and so forth. Reliable food supply, etc.
Yeah, I mean, the sense of security is so, we get very flustered when something is not quite the way we're used to. And Ajahn Chah was a master at shaking that up. It was really. And just being in, especially in the early days of living at Wat Pa Pong, is a very large community, and never quite enough food. There was always a big ball of sticky rice, but but yeah, there's just, you know, so just that sense of, yeah, those primal needs of but it's, but yeah, you can be get quite obsessed, and you've got this beautiful forest around you, and it really highlights those kind of that seeking of security, seeking of stability.